Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game every Wednesday at 9:30. Appointment listening. John McClain going to join us from Houston, and he is on the line with us now. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you for having me on. I'm really looking forward to it. I now have two shows in Nashville, my home away from home.
Yes, yeah, you can. We can hear you with the guys from Outkick, with Hutton and Withrow on 94.9 The Fan, and then with us here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You're still writing for sportsradio610.com. You seem to be having fun in, we're not even going to call it retirement. I don't think there's any such thing with you.
I retired from the Chronicle a year and a half ago so I could get my pension and I could start doing commercials for my radio station, Sports Radio 610, the Texans flagship. And so they asked me, they said, would you write a column? We're trying to beef up our website. I said, sure. And now I end up writing five a week. And they said, could you do a podcast with Sean Pendergast, one of my morning co-hosts? And I said, sure. That's now three Utopia football podcasts, which are 40 to 45 minutes a week. And then I make six appearances on the station, and I also do weekly shows in Nashville, Knoxville, Las Vegas, Waco, San Antonio, and Austin, and I have a blast. This is my 47th year covering the NFL. Every year, the start reminds me of when I was a kid, and I was so excited about the first day of school to see whose class I was going to be in and who was going to be in my class, and that's the way I still feel about the start of the college football season and the NFL season.
Yeah, and John, I mean, I feel the same way because there's the excitement, but there's also the uncertainty. I mean, there are the teams that we think are going to be good, and then there are the teams we think are going to be bad, and we always know that there are surprises. So I think you and I, the last time we talked, I think we kind of agree. The AFC South, it is what it is. I believe it's between the Jags and the Titans. Houston's in a rebuild. Indy's in a rebuild. But how do you view it now going into week one, knowing what the rosters look like?
We all know Mike Vrabel's a hell of a coach. And when you got a healthy Derrick Henry, and then, you know, they were 500 last year with Ryan Tannehill. That would, if he had stayed all year and they'd been 500, they'd been playing for the division on the last day of the season. And I remember in 2018, after the Jaguars had come close to going to the Super Bowl and losing at Foxborough in the championship game, everybody picked them to run away with the division, and they didn't. And they haven't won a division title since, except last year right at the end. And they had a great playoff game to overcome that 27-point deficit against the Chargers, which to me was more of a Chargers choke job. And so I'm not so sure they're going to run away with it, even though I think we all believe Trevor Lawrence is going to be a great quarterback. Took a big step last year under Doug Peterson. But the Titans' MO is tried and true. Run the ball. Have Ryan Tannehill work off the play-action game, which they do as well as anybody. Play great run defense first and foremost, and then get after the quarterback. And that's not going to change. Bringing in a healthy DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a big boost to the offense, and I can't wait to see Hop because he's one of my all-time favorite players to cover, what he does up there, because I can't wait to see him. I just wish Texans didn't have to wait till late in the year to play the Titans, and I can't wait to see him go against them. So I think it's a two-team race, for last place too.
John McClain is with us from Houston, and you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, but the other addition that I know you're familiar with is Tim Kelly taking over as the offensive coordinator for the Titans. Watching him through training camp in the preseason, you're not going to see a whole lot, but watching him in practice, he's an intense dude, which I think matches Mike Vrabel. I really like the addition. I know he was here last year, but elevating him to offensive coordinator, what do you think we can see out of him as the play caller and working with Ryan Tannehill?
Tim Kelly came to Houston with Bill O'Brien from Penn State, where he'd been a GA. And first two, 3 years, I had people that worked with him behind the scenes talk about how impressed he was. And no matter how early somebody came to work, Tim was always there. And he did it the hard way. He started off in an office, basically, that was a closet. and he was with a couple other guys like him, quality control guys. He worked his way up to tight ends, offensive line. He kind of was like Arthur Smith. You know, Arthur survived four head coaches there in different roles, and they all liked him, and now he's a head coach. And Bill O'Brien told me, probably it was even before he made him the play caller. He was offensive coordinator, and O'Brien called the plays. He told me, he said, Tim Kelly's going to be a head coach in this league. And I thought, well, okay, Bill, that's because you had him at Penn State. You brought him with him, and you brought him with you, and you want to make him look good. But the more I watched Tim, the more excited I was about the possibilities when he took over play calling, and he did. And he did a really good job. Now, if you're a play caller and you have a bad quarterback, you're going to be a bad play caller. There's just nothing you can do about it. And he had Watson. He did a really good job of coaching Deshaun Watson. And the only other coach that O'Brien told me would be a head coach, it was after his first year, 2014. And I said, if you could have any coach on your staff, just one, who would it be? And I thought it would be Romeo Crennel, his defensive coordinator, who's one of the best in NFL history. He said, Mike Vrabel. I said, Vrabel? Why in the world would you say Vrabel? He's only been in NFL as a coach for 1 year. He said, let me tell you something. That guy has been preparing himself to be a head coach since he was playing in the NFL. He went to Ohio State. He learned there. And he said, he's going to be a head coach, and I want him on my staff, and he's the one I would take. And he was right. You know, Mike, after he left here after that 2017 season, he gets universal respect around the country. And that's why I think as long as Tannehill can stay healthy, that he can stay right up there with the Jaguars.
The fantastic John McClain is with us this morning on 102.5 The Game. John, they open the game against New Orleans. Do you like that for the Titans? Because there's no Kamara playing, unsure with Derek Carr. Titans really have a really good defense. Your thoughts on this matchup?
I think the Titans are going to shut down the Saints running game. Derek Carr is not a threat to take off and run. And with all due respect to Derek, who's had some really good seasons, they're acting like he's the savior there, but he's not Drew Brees, and he's been in the playoffs one time. And so I think they got a chance to win, run the ball, control the clock, keep the defense fresh. New Orleans got a good defense. But when they don't have a running game, unless they're going to unveil somebody that we don't know about, and I'll say this about Dennis Allen. He's a really good defensive coordinator. He was the head coach 2 years ago for the Raiders, and he was 4-12 both years and got fired. And last year was nothing special, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think here the spread's 3.5. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Titans don't just win that game outright, following their formula of stopping the run, forcing the pass, getting after the quarterback, and then controlling the ball with the running game. And having Tannehill, to me, when Derrick Henry is in the game, he freezes the linebackers, safeties, everybody, as well as anybody I've ever seen. And then that makes Tannehill, it opens up receivers for him as he rolls out. So I think their offense is going to be good, not great, just good. Derrick Henry's got a chance to lead the league in rushing again as he tries to make his way to being a serious candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
John, you've covered NFL a long time. You've seen it all. The kicking situation, why is it so hard to find a kicker these days? Was it like this in the 70s and 80s? I don't remember it being that difficult, but now it's like so difficult to find a decent kicker.
My first training camp was in 1977, and the Oilers had their kicker. And back then, you used to keep the kickers. And now, I think, like the Texans, I have a kicker for the 7 years, Kymie Fairbairn. They have a snapper for 14 years, John Weeks, and they have a punter for three. But you got to get a guy, and you got to believe in him. A lot of teams draft kickers, and they still don't work out. Look at Cade York. You guys know very well from SEC. He just got, I think, cut. And so you've got to find somebody you like. You got to give him a chance. There's so many kickers who have been really good after they've been cut, some multiple times. Pat Leahy, one of the best ever, cut 8 times. And I'm not sure why it finally clicks for the kicker, but I tell the Texans, when you see all these kickers coming and going through through facility doors, and they can't seem to settle on one. It's got to be frustrating. A lot of teams don't seem – they know that kickers win games more than backup position players, so you'd think they'd pay one a lot of money. But you see a lot of them making moves with kickers because it saves them money on a salary cap. To me, I want a kicker who can kick one with no time left on, with, you know, 1 second left on the clock, as long as the distance is in 50. If it's over 50, that's great. But they don't have to kick a lot of 50-yard field goals. You just want consistency in the 40s and 30s. And I'm amazed that more teams can't find kickers that they can count on.
It's funny, John, when we were having the kicking conversation with the Titans, I heard in my head the late, great Floyd Reese's voice a few years ago when he first started here with us, and he was on with Jared Stillman, our afternoon show host, and you know, Jared's asking him, like, what do you think of the Titans? And Floyd just looks at him and goes, we don't have a right tackle. And that was basically what he said. And so I hear, we don't have a kicker in Floyd's voice. And we'll see what Nick Folk can do.
One time with the Oilers, they drafted a kicker. And the general manager, Mike Holovac, was really excited about him. He is from Air Force, so they put him on the phone for us during the draft. And he talked about how excited he was to come to Houston and kick after his Air Force commitment. And we're like, what? And he had a 4-year Air Force commitment, never ended up kicking for the Oilers. So teams try, and sometimes they get it, and sometimes they don't. Folk, I think, is what? He's 39 now.
Yeah.
So something like that. He doesn't get distance on his kickoffs, but he can still kick it. And you just want a guy who can make it when you need it inside the 50. You know, anything outside the 50 is gravy. There's no pressure on those guys to make those. But, man, you got to get the consistency. And the Titans are going to play a lot of close games. With that formula that Vrabel uses, they're going to play a lot of close ones, as you guys know. And having a kicker who can make them and consistently make them is paramount.
John McClain is with us from Houston and will be with us every Wednesday at 9:30. We'll step away, have more with John coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you on this Wednesday. John McClain from Houston joining us. Again, you can check out all his work, sportsradio610.com, for his columns there. Does a bunch of podcasts as well. We're excited to have him every Wednesday at 9:30.
All right, John, Chase and I were talking. There's not a better person in the world to ask this question than to you. What is it with Houston people's obsession with when the Titans are going to go throwback uniforms? I saw the University of Houston had the same colors this weekend. Every time the Titans post those throwback uniforms, people, it seems, on social media from Houston lose their mind. Why? Why do they do that?
Joe, it's an obsession because the flames are fanned by the talk show hosts because those, they think Columbia Blue belongs to Houston. Well, it doesn't. It belongs to the Titans, who are the Oilers. And I think this rivalry has never been what it should have been because neither team was good at the same time playing games to get in the playoffs, in the playoffs, chance to go to the Super Bowl. They've never done it. So if it takes the uniforms to stir it up, that's better than nothing. We call it uniform wars. And my station wants to run me out of town because I'm the only person I know that likes seeing the uniforms again. I love seeing them, University of Houston. I'm going to love seeing the Titans wear them because I love that Columbia Blue. I covered it for more than 20 years. I did a column where I called guys like Warren Moon, Robert Brazell, Dan Pastorini, Bruce Matthews, and they all liked it. They all liked the idea that the Titans are going to wear them because nobody else can wear them. That's what they said before the University of Houston did. Turns out our soccer team has worn Columbia Blue. A couple of our other teams are. They just didn't get any attention. And the University of Houston did because they did a great video that didn't release till Thursday. Carl Lewis recommended it, and it was all about Houston, H-Town, and then University of Houston. And then right at the end, they showed a camera on a shoe that went up the side of the uniform, and it was the same stripe that the Oilers wore, and then it got to the jersey, and then they sprung it on everybody. And I understand the NFL got on them pretty good, so they can't sell them, can't make any money out of them, which is a bummer to me because a lot of people would have bought them because they love Columbia Blue, or as Bud Adams called it, Colombian Blue.
But, you know, John, in the 2009 Hall of Fame game when the Titans wore those throwback early Oiler uniforms, there was a little bit of griping, but nothing near this. It's just amazing how this just took off.
I was at that game, and I remember I came up there for a lot of games in 97 and 98 when they were the Tennessee Oilers, and they wore their uniforms. And I remember the last game at Vanderbilt, and Bruce Matthews and Mike Munchak could not have loaded one more jersey or one more helmet. They carried out everything Oilers that they could because we knew they were going to be the Titans and they were going to have new stadium, new facility, and new uniforms. And I've asked Bruce and Mike how much they actually got away with, and they both said as much as we could carry. So the longer it's like, you know, nostalgia, you know, we're all big on nostalgia, and the longer it goes, the more people think the Oilers never lost a game and that they won multiple championships. They don't remember the bad times, just the good. And I think it's great, but down here, boy, people, it just gets the blood boiling. And I think it's tremendous for talk shows.
Absolutely. John, I want to get your thoughts on, I know he's coaching college football, but Deion Sanders, he has really upset the apple cart and what he's doing over there. Your thoughts on Deion and where he might be in, say, 3 to 5 years?
You mean the next coach of the Cowboys?
Oh, okay.
I tweeted that Saturday night because I don't think it would happen next year because the Cowboys are going to have another good year. They won't go to the Super Bowl for the 27th year in a row. But eventually, say 2-3 years, Mike McCarthy would be fired. And if Deion is still at Colorado, it just seems to be a natural. Jerry Jones won 3 Super Bowls with college coaches, 2 with Jimmy Johnson, 1 with Barry Switzer. Jerry is 80. He wants desperately to win another Super Bowl. When he has an opening, or if they don't advance in the playoffs, fans are going to be clamoring for Deion. A lot of fan bases will be, as will the media that covers the team. Deion lived up there. I don't know if he still got a home there since he coached at Jackson State, now in Boulder. But now it's just one game. You know, they still got to play Oregon and USC, but man, they were so impressive. And if he can keep it up, people say, well, could this work in the NFL? Well, of course it could work in the NFL. He played in the NFL. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we do know that Colorado is not his last stop. And I just think it would be such a natural. Coach Prime with his general manager, president, and owner, Jerry Jones.
Okay, so I don't think you're crazy with that, but you know, you mentioned the Cowboys in the early 90s. Jimmy Johnson's best hire, I think, was Norv Turner. So who would be his Norv Turner?
I have no idea because I'm not familiar enough with the staff whether he would bring his coaches. His coaches did a tremendous job. The guys that caught Shedeur Sanders' passes had 273 yards after the catch. Now, that's not take away from his performance because he was great. But those people there are doing a great coaching job, and it's not all Deion. You know, you take 77 or 80 new players, and you have them look like a cohesive unit in the first game. That is incredible coaching, organization. And that's the thing that impressed me the most. If they had done this, say, 4 or 5 games in the season, okay, they had time to adjust to all the changes. But, man, to do it when they did, it's almost mind-boggling.
John, the Titans, we know, added DeAndre Hopkins. We're talking about that earlier. But what are your thoughts on Treylon Burks as he goes into his second year? He's looked good in training camp. He got hurt, but he seems like I think he's going to be okay for week one. But obviously a lot of pressure on him considering they traded A.J. Brown and then drafted him with that pick. So what are kind of your thoughts on the second-year receiver?
Before I get to Burks, I like to say, you know, they signed Chris Moore. He'd been here for 2 years. A class act, a good receiver. He can come off the bench. He can start. So I think that's going to be a really good move. As far as Burks, you know, I've been saying since they signed Hop, he'll be the best thing that happens to Burks. Number one, He's got the experience. Burks will look up to him. Hop will help him behind the scenes, because there's nothing DeAndre Hopkins hasn't seen or hasn't faced, every kind of coverage. And because D-Hop was never a speed demon, you lose speed, so what? And because he didn't have that much to lose, he's all about intermediate hands, getting open, fighting for the ball. And Burks is going to see him. He's going to see it on tape, and I think it will help his adjustment. And we all know most players make their biggest adjustment going into their second season. They know what it's like to be a pro, off the field, in the classroom, on the field. I think you'll see Burks take a big jump. I don't think anybody's going to be catching 80 or 90 passes, because that's not the formula. But the key is to have a receiver like Hop take pressure off Burks and let Burks become who the Titans thought he was when they drafted him in the first round.
All right, John, I got to ask, do you make predictions? And if so, who do you like in the Super Bowl in February?
I just did a column on sportsradio610.com. There's no paywall. And I like to be different. I didn't want to pick Kansas City. No team has repeated since the Patriots going back to the early 2000s. Didn't pick Philadelphia. No team other than the Patriots has lost the Super Bowl and gone back since the 90s. And so I wanted to be different. Nobody will remember it if I'm wrong. But if I'm right, and I've hit on this twice, I picked Baltimore over Seattle in the Super Bowl. And one year I picked Baltimore and they beat San Francisco. Every media outlet in town called me. One year I picked Philadelphia to go to the Super Bowl and they did. And all the talk shows up there called me. But all my wrong picks every year, it's like Jonathan Hagen keeps saying on OutKick that I get my Super Bowl prediction right every year. Well, it's not true, but if he wants to keep telling people, that's fine with me. So I'm going with the Ravens.
That's awesome. Okay. What would a Detroit-Cleveland Super Bowl mean to the NFL?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. The Lions have won one playoff game since the 50s. We're going to put Buddy Parker, who won two championships with the Lions. Hearing Lions and championships in the same sentence just doesn't sound right. And he should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. And the Browns, I believe I read a stat, every since they have come back, they have never been on the plus side on a points differential. And they might happen this year with Watson, although I guarantee you Watson ain't going to like playing in that cold weather, outdoor with snow and wind. But I think it would be great for the league just because those teams have been so bad for so long.
John, really looking forward to doing this every week. Thanks so much. It's going to be a lot of fun, and enjoy the games this weekend.
Jason, Joe, thank you guys very much. It's an honor to be on with you, and I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. John McClain, sportsradio610.com. You can check out the Hutopia podcast as well, and does a lot. He's going to join us every Wednesday at 9:30 here on the show.
That's good stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. He's covered the 47 years. He's covered the league. So definitely be a wealth of knowledge for us. We'll have Rick Stockstill coming up at 10:30. Coming up next, though, a topic that we had yesterday came up with Trevor Maddich. You'll hear his response next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.